It takes work and effort and energy to go find those mentorships. And if you're just going through the curriculum is not slotted to put you in a place where mentorship is involved. It's not in academia. There is this huge disconnect from academia to practice.
Welcome to the So You're a Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I'm your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Garth Robillard. Garth is a second-year vet student and host of the Veterinary Vibes podcast, where he shares stories from all over the veterinary profession. Sharing the mic with a fellow podcaster means that today is only part one of two of my conversation with Garth. So in this episode, we talk about how mentorship is discussed within academia and how things are changing, hopefully for the better. We also start to deconstruct the factors behind the negative narrative that students are hearing about the profession and how we as students and veterinarians can be a force for change. The episode ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, but have no fear, part two will be available next week. All right. Well, Garth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mariah. I appreciate you having me on.
This is an interesting how the turntables have turned type of scenario because we got to meet at a VMX this year. And if people don't know already, which they will from the intro, that you are also a podcaster. Kind of fill us in, like, who are you? What are you doing? Why are you here?
Yeah, you know, those are the questions I ask myself all the time.
Every day.
Every single day. So yeah, my name is Garth Robillard. I am a second year veterinary student out at Western University on the sunny Southern California coast. And yeah, I started a podcast because I have an hour commute every single day to school, and I listened to wonderful shows like this, and I really just sat there and said, how do I fill this gap learning about something or teaching myself something or just really understanding veterinary medicine a little bit deeper, you know? And I looked for all these different platforms, and it was really hard for me to find a podcast that encompassed everything. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast. And I just had no experience. Someone reached out to me and was asking me, when are you starting this thing? Because it had been in talks for about 6 months. And with no experience, I just said, ready, set, go right now. Like, start talking and hopefully people are listening. And I've had good responses from it. So it's been really a big blessing for me. And it's put me in positions like this to be on your wonderful show today and just meeting you. I want to go back to that. So really one of those, I just want you to know, a key moment for me in veterinary medicine, because I want to surround myself with people like you, veterinarians like you. And I say that because how we met, if people don't know, we were at a talk for Dr. Adam Christman, and he did a wonderful talk at VMX. And I really was there for two reasons: to, of course, push my education and also do some networking and also build my podcast. So I've DM'd everybody. And of course, these DMs go to the spam folders.
Yep.
And that's okay, because you guys have a lot of followers and that's great. So I went up to Dr. Christman. I said, hey, I'd love to have you on the show. Please come on. He's like, yeah, totally. You know, reach out to me. Super receptive. And then all of a sudden I hear from behind me, what did you say?
Is
podcast?
Is that what I sound like?
I loved it because I turned around and I was like, what? How did she hear that? I was like, that's amazing. She's got
eavesdropping,
like, amazing ears. But my, you heard power, that buzzword podcast, right? And I turn around and it's you. And I already know who you are because I've seen you on Instagram and I followed you or listened to your show. And I started laughing and I'm like, oh, I know who you are. And I pointed both of you. I'm like, you guys both left me on unread.
I was offended yeah, at that moment. I was like, what? No.
you turned red. It was great. I think that little bit of embarrassment really, you know, we had that connection. And then from there, you were just so sweet to say, hey, you know, I want to introduce you to all these people because I'm a deer in my headlights. That's my first conference. All those people. I don't know anyone. And so walking around with you, and oh my God, my feet hurt and my head hurt from all that. And it was just the best experience for me, because I came home just really fulfilled and really was so just proud to be going into a profession where the intent and love and passion and care for each other was just right on your sleeve. So I want to thank you for that. I love that. So that's pretty much about me and how we met. And yeah, I'm excited. So
yeah. Oh gosh. Bringing me back to that moment. Oh goodness. Well, first off, thank you for such kind words. I'm usually still always taken aback when people say things like that, but I can kind of like that feeling that you get like when you start the podcast and someone starts to reach out being like, hey, thank you for making that episode, or that really spoke to me, or just along those lines. And you don't quite realize just how cool it is that this is what you get to do. One thing that was really interesting for me when we started chatting about the whole podcast thing, and I found out, I was like, hey, you're a second year vet student. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a weird kind of deja vu for me, because I started my podcast, or this podcast, when I was a second going into third year of vet school. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was doing like video episodes at the time. And obviously the amount of editing that goes into something like that was intense alongside my studies. Meant that one, the episodes weren't very good. Two, I just wasn't able to create them at the rate that I wanted to. And so when I had the opportunity, like I had thankfully a grant that was available, I applied. I think I was the only one who applied. I had 24 hours to do it. I totally BS'd the application. Sorry, guys. But I still got it. And as a result, I was able to get the equipment that I needed to start a podcast. But I still had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to reach out to people. At the time, Vetstagram really wasn't a thing. There just wasn't a huge number of people. But that's what I would do. I would DM. And I thankfully, a lot of people, at least maybe you found this in the profession as well, people are really receptive to new podcasts and wanting to share their information or their excitement of the profession with other people, especially vet students. I find that there's a special group of people that are just super excited. And if you say, hey, I'm a vet student, I have a podcast, I'd like for you to be on it, they're usually like, yes, when, tell me how, like, I'll be right there. And it's just the most incredible thing to have that kind of support. So is that what you've been finding as well?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there. I think this profession provides some of the most accepting people, because we're put into situations every single day where we have to do that. I say have to do that with positive intent, because us coming into this field, it's very different. I always say that I'm looking in my safe space, my safe bubble of vet school, and I'm looking out and I'm reaching out. And sometimes we don't have the ability to reach out because we're afraid. We don't want to have the experience. We don't want to have the confrontations. We don't want to have these things happening because we're so focused on school. And for me, I'm trying to find a healthy balance of creating relationships and gaining the knowledge from experienced veterinarians or professionals even that have just been in the field, maybe their first year, their second year, their third year, because I'm going to be in their position at some point. And so I definitely see that in the community, especially, you know, I go back to saying that I'm really blessed to be able to start a podcast. And I think that gives me a little bit of leverage that I need for myself, because say I struggle academically or in another, you know, specific field, I can make up for in those relationships. And I'm really just appreciative of all the veterinarians and all the veterinary professionals really that have just been so welcoming. So it's a wonderful, it just encourages me every single day. I really feel like I'm meant for this, and I hope I can continue that feeling the rest of my career, really.
And I honestly, I can say, like, as someone who's been doing podcasting for not that much longer, to be fair, in the grand scheme of things, like, I am very excited that you have joined the podcast space, that you're a part of Vetstagram, that you're kind of in that community, because we need voices like yourself. And it's really cool to hear the stories that you're able to bring out of people. So I definitely want to see what kind of comes in the next couple of years. And I know it is super hard to be a podcaster and a vet student. And for you, you're also a new dad. So you have that trifecta going on. Not a lot of time. And you're doing all the editing yourself. So that's a lot.
Yeah. You know, it's like you said, I'm choosing where to put my time, my energy, my effort into. And I want to keep a piece of that to be podcasting. I think it's an important space. And it just reminds me every single day, every time I get a message, every time I get, you know, interaction or something that comes from it, it's worth it to me. I just recently received a message from somebody in the Philippines, and it was really touching for me to get that, because you really don't understand your reach. The internet is such a beautiful space to create connections and encourage and educate and laugh with and cry with and do all these emotions that you don't always get to have because you're secluded. You're in your work life every single day. Just getting that message, I was like, this is badass. How cool of an opportunity is this that I don't even know who this person is and they're reaching out to me because of me starting something I had no idea. I still don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. And I love that because I'm surrounding myself with people who know what they're doing.
Here's the secret though. We don't know what we're doing.
It's great. Yeah. It's awesome.
Oh my goodness.
It's encouraging. It's inspiring. It's wonderful. And I'm so happy. And, you know, I just really want to push all those veterinary students that feel like, you know, you said going back to time. Time is everything. And I say that again, time is everything, because we get so focused, hyper-focused on things that we think are going to matter, when in the grand scheme of life, it's really not that important. Your class rank is not important. Your GPA is not important. There is significance for it. Don't get me wrong. You need to be passing your classes, right? You need to be doing things, but it is not everything. Time is. And where you invest your time really needs to be drawn out. So that's why, I mean, that's one key to happiness for me that I've had to learn. And that's, again, going back to thank God that I am a, you know, non-traditional student, because I would not be in the space, the headspace I am, if I'm, you know, we've got a 21-year-old classmate. I cannot imagine. Cannot imagine that. That's wild.
And like you said, it's a different, whole other like frame of mind, life stage at that point. And in a way, as you were talking, I was like, I can tell you've talked to Christine Staton recently with all of that.
Which I love
her. We love Christine. Both of us have recorded with her. And so I know, I think her episode with you is now live.
Yep.
By the time this episode comes out, my episode with her will also be live. And Christine, love you. You're amazing. So as we're talking about student life, I feel like there's a lot that we can dive into there. And of course, because this podcast, we talk about mentorship. That's a perfect place to start. And I'm always kind of curious talking to vet students and kind of getting their viewpoint on the current climate, essentially, within vet school. So at your university, at least, have you found that they've been talking to you guys about mentorship? Has it come up in conversation? Are you aware of any classes that are to come even about it? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah. So mentorship, we have to be careful with that word, right? You'd always hear people. It's a buzzword. It's a big thing. But for me, if I had to summarize it, the mentorship has sailed, right? And whether you're on it, you better make sure, there's my dad joke. You better make sure you're on it.
Because
if you don't go out of your way to get that ticket, you're going to get left behind. And so in veterinary school right now, the stage I'm in, it still is pretty much non-existent. It's not talked about as much as it should be. And this is my perspective, my opinion. Don't get me wrong. It takes work and effort and energy to go find those mentorships. And if you're just going through the curriculum is not slotted to put you in a place where mentorship is involved. It's not in academia. There is this huge disconnect from academia to practice. Unfortunately, if you don't navigate or find the correct people to put you in a position to navigate as you go through the program, you can completely go through vet school without even saying the word mentorship.
Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up, my course, So You're a Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/syav-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
You may be getting mentored, right? You may be mentoring someone else. But if you don't really understand and define what mentorship is to you as a person, you're going to get left behind. So for me, I involved myself in associations like the VBMA because I knew business and mentorship go hand in hand. And so I said, well, I'm not getting any business classes really yet. They're going to give us one, I think, from Dr. Weinstein. That is a saint of a man. I really appreciate and respect everything he's done for the veterinary profession. So I'm excited for that component of it. But for me, it really has to be something that I bring up to faculty, let's say. So again, if you don't go out of your way, if you're an introvert, if you're not asking all those questions about mentorship, about what you should look for, and if you're not involved in these clubs, which is why I recommend you get involved in these clubs. And if you feel like you don't have time to be involved in these clubs, then you can actually just reach out directly to professionals and ask about mentorship. It takes almost no effort to send an email, no effort to send a DM, to set a time aside. Most of these professional companies or people have resources for you to educate you about mentorship, to teach you what you should look for in a contract when you're going to sign it. Really defining that, you know, and Dr. Dan Phillips has a really good, you know, way and really says define mentorship, like really have them define it because it's a buzzword. Everybody says it's a buzzword. They're going to put it in everything. They're going to throw it at you. They're going to say, yeah, we have a mentorship. Then you're going to get there and it's going to be 2 weeks where you're with somebody and then they leave you behind and they give you the keys to the establishment. And so for me, I know I will not survive in that type. So vet school, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt because it is such a limited time and the sciences are extremely important, but there definitely needs to be more talk about mentorship.
Yes. And that has been the age-old issue, honestly, every time I talk with someone that's in academia or trying to, because that was a big thing when I was a student, was like, how do we bring mentorship into the curriculum, given the fact that there's almost no time to implement mentorship into the curriculum? And as much as like everyone knows it is important, but again, like how do you define it? And so I think it's fantastic that you're starting to think about these things now that you're getting involved with the VBMA, other organizations like your SAVMA, if you have that here in the States, just because that will develop the networks that you need, the connections that you need so that you can find a person that can be one of your mentors, which again, we talk about it a ton here on the show, but like there is different levels of mentorship. And so it's not like you're going to find one singular person that's going to be your only mentor. But in reality, you're going to have multiple people that are mentoring you in different aspects of your life within veterinary medicine. And being able to start that process now as a student is incredibly important. But the bigger challenge that I see, and maybe you can answer this for me, is that students, they start to really understand the value of mentorship as they're going from their third year into their fourth year, really starting to look at practices. And they're starting to hear this word mentorship and think about, oh, who's going to train me when I graduate? And at that point, they're like, oh, wait, can I get more mentorship classes? Whereas when we try and offer, and this was the issue we had, when we try and offer mentorship classes or any kind of curriculum to first and second years, they're kind of disinterested in the idea. They're like, I don't really see the point of it. I'm not going to graduate for another 2 or 3 years. And I just need to focus on my anatomy. I need to know all the insertions and origins. I'm like, yes, you do. But something that's going to be so much more lasting and have a larger impact on your clinical life is going to be your ability to define mentorship at this stage, or at least start the process of defining mentorship. It will change over the next couple of years, but starting that process, looking for mentors. But again, like how do you feel like we need to, because like obviously you get it, but how do we help first and second year veterinarians really start to understand the value of defining mentorship and finding the start of their mentors at this point? Big question.
Yeah, that's a big question. You know, putting value into things is so hard because value is subjective, right? But if you make it a core component, one of the ologies they say, anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, if mentorship-ology was a thing, it already needs to be implemented into the program because we're seeing this is a profession that you cannot get through as an individual. There's not a solitary position in veterinary medicine that doesn't require some form of mentorship. And whether it means you being the mentor or, you know, being the mentee, really, because at the end of the day with, you know, veterinary schools, like you said, it goes back to the age old, time is of the essence. You got to learn all these insertions. Like you said, you got to know all your anatomy. I think saying that time isn't there to do it is really just lying to yourself to make yourself feel better. Academia needs to step up and realize, hey, something is wrong. There's something that we're not doing on the social aspect. And that's why a lot of schools are not taking specific tests, for example, anymore into admissions. They're taking this holistic approach because they're realizing, oh, this is interesting. We have all these 4.0 type A, can never fail, have all these issues. And then they go into practice and yeah, they're scientifically well-rounded. But where's the sociology aspect? Where is the conversational aspect? Why are they failing? What is happening? And I think they're starting to realize this is a profession where if you're not able to regulate emotion, if you're not able to, you know, educate a client or connect and create a culture with the client, you're never going to be able to practice the medicine that you want to practice. And mental health, like that's the biggest thing, is we're finding out the flaws in veterinary medicine, and mental health is like everyone says it, mental health, mental health, mental health. But what are they actually doing about it? So I think this needs to be a core foundational requirement, really, at this point. It needs to be a requirement where how, like you were an undergrad, you had an advisor, right? How often did you actually go to your advisor? Never. And when you did, they told you you could never get into vet school. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do. They tell you all these things. But I think it really starts at the foundation with education. And really, it starts way before vet school. And I think teaching the youth and teaching even in undergrad the importance of mentorship and relationship with academia, I think it can really blossom into something beautiful. I think putting emphasis for first and second year students, you need to have a mentor. And that doesn't mean you need to go find a 30-year professional that is in this specific area that you're interested in. It can be your friends, right? It can be, you know, family members. It can be anybody can mentor you about something. Someone is an expert in something. And if you can learn from them and harness, I like to call them little gold nuggets from those people, and really put them in your treasure chest inside of you and say, I'm going to utilize that. I mean, there's so many things that I've learned just going through life, never knowing I was being mentored, never knowing. I was like, oh my God, now that I think about it, I reached out to them because I wanted mentorship. It was like an accidental mentorship. And I think when I were younger, if I was actually looking for a mentor, I would probably be a lot further ahead in a lot of things. And so that's kind of, I know that's a really long-winded answer for your question, but I think it needs to be a core component. I really do.
No, absolutely. I honestly fully agree with that. And it was a big question, so it required a big answer, quite honestly. And I think one thing is that that's kind of cool, that, or at least important to point out, is that the type of mentorship that we're talking about here is very informal mentorship. It's not that you need to have someone that you're signing a document saying, you are going to be my mentor, and this is how many times we are going to meet, and blah, blah, blah. Like, that is the type of thing that you have with a mentorship agreement in your first year of practice. But at this stage, as a first and second year veterinarian, like, what you're looking for is someone that you can sit down, you can vent to and say, this is really hard. How do I survive anatomy? How can I memorize this better? How can I utilize this in practice? Like, maybe you have someone that is here on social media, here in Vetstagram. Like, we can be your mentors to a degree. It's just to provide some guidance of how you're going through your veterinary schooling, looking for jobs. Like, all of those things can have informal mentorship. And again, like, it's vastly undervalued within the first and second years of academia. And I know there are a lot of schools that are starting to implement this, or at least they are playing with the idea of how do we put this into our curriculum. So we're not sitting here saying academia is doing it poorly, they're doing it wrong, they're missing out. Like, I know, like, I've been behind the scenes, I know they are working on this. It's just one of those things where hindsight's 20/20. It would have been really nice if we had had this kind of a realization about 10, 15 years ago before we kind of got into the mess that we're in right now. But they're working on it. It's happening. So the kind of thing we need to hear from you guys as students is to say, yeah, I do see the value in this. And I'm going to start asking the questions, start like actually providing the prompts, because that will help them develop the curriculum. They can sit here and see what is happening to veterinarians and do a retrospective type of development of the curriculum, but they need to hear from you guys. They need to hear, what are your concerns? What are your fears? What are you excited about to help them develop this curriculum? Which, that's another whole set of questions I have for you, mm-hmm. Garth, is like, what is academia telling you guys about what the landscape of veterinary medicine looks like? Are you guys excited about what's to come? Are you guys scared? Like, what are they telling you guys at this point?
Yeah, you know, you're going to get a lot of different perspectives on what academia thinks of clinical practice. You know, you have a multitude of very educated people. It's almost a melting pot of diversities coming into academia and saying, hey, how can we all implement what we think is important and what we see in the field? And I think faculty, of course, they want us to succeed. They're not in academia for us to fail. And it is difficult sometimes, in my opinion, for academia that's been out of actual clinical world for so long to really say it has to be this way, and this way. And this is the way we do it here. And I mean, you've probably seen it. You've probably gone out to practice and you've seen complete opposites of what they taught you in academia. And you're like, you get the person that's like, we actually didn't do that in school. We did it this way. And you're like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes. Like, let's dissect what you just said. And so I think, of course, nothing is ever going to be perfect. I want to assume that their intentions are pure and honest and good as professionals in the field that are in a very important, if not the most important aspect of veterinary medicine, is actually forming the doctors in front of you. I think there's just a lot of underlying issues in the field that can get caught up. You know, they can catch people up after just being so, like I said, in the safe space, the safe bubble. I'm not sitting here saying veterinary medicine is exactly like the education I'm getting right now. It can be completely different. I could learn a whole bunch more in my clinical years that didn't really tie into what I learned in my book work, you know, PBL type years. And so for me, I love what they do with a lot of different aspects. But I, again, go back to wanting to integrate a lot of change. There needs to be a lot of change because we've seen a downtrend. And hopefully there, like you said, hopefully students are speaking up and speaking out and writing to their professionals and speak and having those moments of saying, hey, look, that sounded great 20 years ago, but it's changed. We value this a little bit differently. Can we work on this? Is there a way to incorporate, you know, mentorship? Is there a way to incorporate finances, how to own a practice, how to do these things? Of course, that's all secondary. Your initial responsibility is to understand the sciences, but I still put a lot of value, put almost equal value in learning those other things. So,
yeah. And like one thing that I'm hearing from you is like there's that ivory tower versus real life argument. And the one caveat that I add to that after being in practice now is like there is a lot of value in learning the ivory tower. Like obviously learning the gold standard is very important, because if you don't know what you are like projecting towards, you don't know where your variation can be. So essentially, like, sure, you may learn like the best possible way to put a catheter in, or the best possible way to do a gastrotomy. But when you get into practice, that's when you learn how to apply variation. You kind of do what you can in the situation that you have with the information and people and supplies and finances that you have available. But if you don't know what like gold standard is, you don't know how to like modify based on that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's that aspect to it, which I always caution people a little bit when they're being like, oh, real life is not like the ivory tower type of thing. And I'm like, yes, you're very, very right. And I was one of those people that I was like, well, this is how they taught us in vet school. And of course, people are like, grumble, grumble, grumble. So like you need to have that as a target to be like heading towards, but knowing that more often than not, you're not going to reach that. You're not going to do it exactly that way, but you're going to know like what the safest way, what the best way to do it is when you're trying to reach for it. I feel like I'm not explaining that as well as I could have. Oh my goodness, you guys, I am so sorry we have to end the episode there, but we will bring you part two of my discussion with Garth next week, where we'll finish our discussion and cover the topics like mindset and culture within veterinary academia. So stay tuned.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, So Your Vet Now What, or non-clinical skills training class of the same name. Until next time, take care.